On the line right at the moment, I have the member for Kennedy, the Honourable Bob Catter. A very good morning to you and thanks for joining us.
Very great honour to be on your program, Greg.
Bob, you're in the middle of things in Canberra, as you are, usually in the middle of the dust that's flying, let's say. Of course, the big thing at the moment is the closing the gap. Give us your thoughts on that at the moment.
In 96 minutes' time, I will be standing up in the Parliament of Australia in question time and asking this question of the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, surely a vast disconnect between apology ceremonies and reality. Australia, population 2% Indigenous, prisons 27%. Life expectancy 82, Indigenous 71. House occupancy 3, Indigenous 13. Why? White fellas can drink, black fellas can't. So no blue card, so no job. Indigenous house building, 88% white fellas, 12% black fellas. On Aboriginal lands, 21% of Australia, no title deed, so can't own land. So can't borrow money, so can't have an economy. If, PM, you let us build our houses, abolish race laws, and overwhelmingly grant title deeds, surely the gap closes. Now, that's the question the Prime Minister will be asked. It will be sent over to him 20 or 30 minutes before I ask the question, because I'm not throwing banana peels in front of him. I'm not trying to have a go at him. I just want him to act. Now, these things are not hard to do, Greg. Up until 1990, all of those conditions existed. And unemployment in First Australian communities in Queensland was half what it is now. Our prison population, percentage-wise, was half what it is now. I mean, people didn't in mass leave our communities because alcohol was banned. The people were living in our community areas and staying there. Now, I think the most bitter pill that every Australian, decent Australian, has to swallow is to go to the Torres Straits, where every house had a market garden, and where now virtually no houses have a market garden. I probably had 200 meals when I was minister in the Torres Straits. I can't ever remember eating a single morsel that was not grown or caught in the Torres Straits. They were completely self-sufficient in food. Now they're not, and the diabetes rates may be the highest in the world. And I'd fairly confidently say that they are the highest in the world. Now, you can put your own name on what the government did when they banned market gardens. Now, why'd they ban market gardens? Because, oh, disease will come in from New Guinea into Australia. In actual fact, the canoes used to come down regularly from New Guinea into the Torres Straits and then onto the mainland. Now, the canoes don't come virtually at all. Now, I'm not saying that there are not some tinnies coming in, but nothing like in the old days where the canoes had come all the time. And you have to look at the physical facial features of the Melanesians that live in the Torres Straits and the Melanesians that live in New Guinea to answer that question. So it was the cruelest. I've been very ashamed to be Australian on some occasions, but this is the time that I am most ashamed to be an Australian. Now, on the first Australian communities, people say Aboriginal communities, in Cape York and the Gulf Country, when I was minister, there was a market garden on every single community. And I'm not taking any credit for that. We inherited those from the missions. Almost all of those communities were missions. And they take great delight knocking the Christians. Yeah, well, half the people there today would not be alive if it wasn't for the Christians that stood up and protected them. They would own no land virtually at all if it wasn't for the Christian missions, and I pay great credit to the Anglican Church in protecting those lands for the people. And the Lutherans, Jockey Peterson was a missionary who went up there, and created Hopevale out of nothing. It was just Crown land, and he requested that the government give it to the local people. So they gave 145,000 hectares to the local people. He worked very closely with Leo Rosendahl, whose son later on became a Lutheran minister in the church.
Bob, these problems that you're talking about, that they've gone on for decades, decades upon decades, and there's been, you know, hundreds of people talk about them. There's been no real solution to any of the problems that you speak about.
Greg, you weren't around in the 80s. You're probably not even born.
Yes, I was. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Well, you were, but you were very young. In the 80s, the house building was done by exclusively local Labor. And any area where I found that there was house building by non-local Indigenous Labor, the executive officer was sacked. And I did that in Mount Isa, myself, personally. In most cases, departmental officials carried out the axing. But it was punishable by instantaneous dismissal if all of the houses were not built. Now, I am sure there were exceptions to that rule because we couldn't police every single house that was built. But it is a fair call to say that all the house building was done by local Indigenous Labor. Now, do I deserve the credit for that? I deserve none of the credit for that. Greg Wallace was CEO, effectively appointed by Rosendahl, in this case Lester Rosendahl, who was running the department in the days of the Jockey Peterson government when I was minister. But Rosendahl was effectively put Wallace there, convinced Roy Jingle to take him on as CEO. He started work for the Dole. Gerhard Pearson, Nolly's brother, rang me up and said, well, why can't we use the work for the Dole Labor to build the houses? So I rang up Jerry Hearn, the federal minister. He said, great idea. He said, couldn't come from you. You're not that smart. I said, don't be smart, Jerry, because it don't suit you. Comic aside. Back to the story. And then Rosendahl and Laws, who was effectively head of the department, they got agreement from all of the Shire chairmen, they are now called mayors, all the Shire chairmen in those days of all the community areas, that all houses would be built by exclusively local Indigenous Labor. And I hit the bloody roof over it because, I mean, half the people in those days couldn't speak English. You know, half of them had virtually no, couldn't read or write much at all. And well, we're going to build our own houses. Well, the fact is we did. When Rosendahl and Lawsy were right, and I was wrong. So I'm emphasising that, you know, none of this came from me. It came from Greg Wallace, Hopevale boy. It came from Gerhard Pearson, Hopevale boy. Rosendahl, Hopevale boy. And from Laws, Sherberg boy, Steve Renoff's cousin, I might add, and a very, very good rugby league player himself. Then we trialled out after a huge fight. I eventually rolled over. Again, it wasn't my doing. It was Donny Fraser at Dormagee. And he was the mayor there at that stage, or maybe the year later. But he was the executive officer there, black bloke from down south. And he wanted us to build our own concrete blocks. So it was a huge fight, which I lost. So all right, I put one trial factory in. It worked so successfully that we put eight factories in. I think one was at Hopevale, in strategic areas throughout North Queensland. And we made our own blocks as well as built our own houses. Now, I mean, if you just did that, that was occurring in the 80s. That creates 702 jobs, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, in North Queensland. 702 jobs. And there was about 60 apprentices. That's just in North Queensland. Well, I mean, that's half your problem solved. Now, the blue cards have stopped people from getting jobs. I mean, you ban grog. I mean, I can stop people from drinking. So everyone drinks at one time or another. So everyone gets criminal convictions. They can't have a blue card. In one community, I won't mention the name, there are only two adult women in that entire community that can get a blue card. All of them have criminal conviction for having a beer. I mean, Everyone in Australia will have a beer this week.
Yeah, Bob, but one other huge part of the problem is land and ownership of land. And through what happened with the native title, inalienable freehold and all these fancy names, people never really got to have freehold title land. How can that be changed?
That's what I said. That's what I said. I mean, no title deeds, right? If you can't get a title deed, you can't own land. I mean, if you can't own land, you can't borrow money. If you can't borrow money, you can't have an economy. An economy is created by people borrowing money. And but you've put your finger right on the heart of the problem. It is title deeds. And, I mean, I could see that when I was first elected. I thought, well, my hometown of Cloncurry is near enough to 50% blackfellow. I don't know, we're a bit of everything at Cloncurry. Call ourselves the Curry Mob. But I think it's a fair call to say that population would have been about half Murray in those days. And but, you know, I would have thought about a dozen engine drivers in the railways would have been first Australians. Two of the foremen on the council, well, that's the most highly paid job in Cloncurry, was supervisor on the council, and then under the supervisor there were four foremen. Well, two of those were first Australians. My partner was blackfellow. The four mines surrounding me were all owned by blackfellas. One of them owned a cattle station down the road. I mean, these people, I mean, you know, an engineer that's on about 220,000 a year. So, I mean, these people all had big jobs. They were, you know, well, why haven't we got that in Cape York and the Gulf communities? What's different in Cloncurry? Well, in Cloncurry, you can own your own house. Yarraba, you couldn't.
Yeah, well, look, I suggested this even to the then Prime Minister Tony Abbott, who's agreed it's a good idea to actually turn land into freehold and put caveats in there so you can lock up your sacred sites, never to be bought or sold. So you can have all your cultural aspect there, and then the rest of it you can buy and sell like everybody else buys and sells land. But people sort of agree and talk about things, but nothing seems to get done.
Greg, when I was first appointed the job, Eric Laws, who was, you know, his sister was the first woman graduate from a university in Australia. And head boy at my school, Mickey Miller, was the first blackfellow graduate in Australian, a university graduate in Australian history. Charlie Perkins, they're a Cloncurry family as well. He's the first head of a department. So I sort of knew the leadership really well. But when I was appointed minister, Laws, he said, are you going to do real good in this? I said, why? And he said, because you care. I said, well, every minister cares, you know. Every member of parliament cares. He said, mate, you've been in this job 7 years. I've been working with politicians for nearly 20 years. But I can tell you they don't. See, every nerve and muscle and sinew was strained by us to get that legislation through and to get it working so that you could just walk in to the council chambers, council offices at Kawanyama, asked for a form to apply to own a block of land, whether it was for a market garden or a cattle station or, you know, a house or whatever, and you filled out the form and took it back. Now, you know, we only had 2,000 people working in the department, and they were involved in delivering health and education, all these services were brought out of this one department then. And but we still managed to get out in about 4 or 5 years. We got out 800 title deeds. Now, in the 30 years since, Greg, and this is where you're dead right, in the 30 years since 1990, when that government fell, in the 30 years since, I doubt whether there'd be 2 dozen title deeds issued. The process is so complicated and so expensive and so non-existent. So each government comes in and says, oh, the last government got it wrong, we're going to get it right. Well, that'd be fine if they did it, but they do nothing. Nothing ever happens. So, whereas you could just walk down the council offices, ask for a form, fill it out. If the council, it was put before the council for two meetings, and if the council, the locally elected Shire Council, didn't object, then it went through. So that was before Mabo's yet have taken the TEOs now, you know, as well in that process. But there wouldn't be any problem with that. I mean, you know, basically someone take up, you know, an acre of land or 10 acres of land. I mean, who the bloody hell cares? 30 acres of land at Kaonyama, who the hell cares? But, you know, if you take up 400 acres of land and the water is yours, I mean, this idea that the Brisbane government owns the water at Kaonyama or at Pomperau or at Dormagee, I mean, hold on a minute, mate. You don't own that water. We live on that land. That's our water. And similarly for the Whitefellas too, you know. Hey, that's our water. You can't tell us we can't use it. Hey, that's our tree. You can't tell us we can't cut it down. And, you know, Gregor would love Clarence Walker.
Yeah, well, we're running short of time.
Yeah, I'm going to shut up. Yep.
And you've got your meeting with Destiny with your letter to the PM and Parliament a little later. And
question.
And I'd like to thank you for coming on the program again.
Very great honour, Greg. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very great honour. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob Cutter.